Section 2B. Odin waited for Trit to do something. He was reasonably sure that Trit would not actually go up to the surface after Dua. It would mean leaving the children, and that was always hard for Trit to do. Trit waited, without speaking for a while, and when he left, it was in the direction of the children's alcove. Odin was almost glad when Trit left. Not quite, of course, for Trit had been angry and withdrawn so that interpersonal contact had weakened and the barrier of displeasure had arisen. Odin could not help but be melancholy at that. It was like the slowing of the life pulse. He sometimes wondered if Trit felt it too. No, that was unfair. Trit had the special relationship with the children. And as for Dua, who could tell what Dua felt? Who could tell what any emotional felt? They were so different, they made left and right seem alike in everything but mind. But even allowing for the erratic way of emotionals, who could tell what Dua, especially Dua, felt? That was why Odin managed to be almost glad when Trit left, for Dua was the question. The delay in initiating the third child was indeed becoming too long, and Dua was growing less amenable to persuasion, not more. There was a growing restlessness in Odin himself that he could not quite identify, and it was something he would have to discuss with Lawston. He made his way down to the hard caverns, hastening his movements into a continuous flow that was not nearly as undignified as the oddly exciting mixture of wavering and rushing that marked the emotional curve along, or as amusing as the stolid weight shift of the parental. He had the keen thought image of Trit clumping in pursuit of the baby rational, who of course was almost as slippery at his age as an emotional, and of Dua having to block the baby and bring him back, and of Trit cluckingly undecided whether to shake the small life object or enfold him with his substance. From the start, Trit could thin himself more effectively for the babies than for Odin, and when Odin rallied him about that, Trit answered gravely, for of course he had no humor about such things. Ah, but the children need it more. Odin was selfishly pleased with his own flow and thought it graceful and impressive. He had mentioned that once to Lawston, to whom, as his hard teacher, he confessed everything, and Lawston had said, "But don't you think an emotional or a parental feels the same about his own flow pattern? If each of you think differently and act differently, ought you not to be pleased differently? A triad doesn't preclude individuality, you know." Odin wasn't sure he understood about individuality. Did that mean being alone? A hard one was alone, of course. There were no triads among them. How did they stand it? Odin had still been quite young when the matter had come up. His relationship with the hard ones had only been beginning, and it suddenly struck him that he wasn't sure that there were no triads among them. That fact was common legend among the soft ones, but how correct was the legend? Odin thought about that, and decided one must ask and not accept matters on faith. Odin had said, "Are you a left or a right, sir?" In later times, Odin pulsed at the memory of that question. How incredibly naive to have asked it, and it was very little comfort that every rational asked the question of a hard one in some fashion sooner or later. Usually sooner. Lawston answered quite calmly, "Neither, little left. There are no lefts or rights among the hard ones." "Or emotionals?" "Or middlings?" And the hard one changed the shape of his permanent sensory region in a fashion that Odin eventually associated with amusement or pleasure. "No. No middlings either. Just hard ones of one kind." Odin had to ask. It came out involuntarily, quite against his desire.
But how do you stand it?
It is different with us, Little Left. We are used to it.
Could Odin be used to such a thing?
There was the parental triad that had filled his life so far, and the sure knowledge that he would at some not too distant time form a triad of his own.
What was life without that?
He thought about it hard now and then. He thought about everything hard as it came up. Sometimes he managed to catch a glimpse of what it might mean, that hard ones had only themselves, neither left brother nor right brother, nor mid-sister, nor melting, nor children, nor parentals. They had only the mind, only the inquiry into the universe. Perhaps that was enough for them. As Odin grew older, he caught bits of understanding as to the joys of inquiry. They were almost enough, almost enough, and then he would think of Trit and of Dua, and decide that even all the universe beside was not quite enough. Unless, it was odd, but every once in a while it seemed that there might come a time, a situation, a condition when, then he would lose the momentary glimpse, or rather, glimpse of a glimpse, and miss it all. Yet in time it would return, and lately he thought it grew stronger and would remain almost long enough to be caught. But none of that was what should involve him now. He had to see about Dua. He made his way along the well-known route along which he had first been taken by his parental, as Trit would soon take their own young rational, their own baby left. And, of course, he was instantly lost in memory again. It had been frightening then. There had been other young rationals, all pulsing and shimmering and changing shape, despite the parental signals on every side to stay firm and smooth and not disgrace the triad. One small left, a playmate of Odin, had in fact flattened thin, baby fashion, and would not unflatten, despite all the efforts of his horribly embarrassed parental. He had since become a perfectly normal student, though no Odin, as Odin himself could not help realizing with considerable complacency.
They met a number of hard ones on that first day of school. They stopped at each in order that the young rational vibration pattern might be recorded in several specialized ways, and for a decision to be reached as to whether to accept them for instruction then, or to wait another interval, and if then, for what kind of instruction. Odin, in a desperate effort, had drawn himself smooth as a hard one approached, and held himself unwavering. The hard one said, and the first sound of the odd tones of his voice almost undid Odin's determination to be grown up. This is quite a firm-held rational. How do you represent yourself, Left? It was the first time Odin had ever been called Left, instead of in the form of some diminutive, and he felt firmer than ever as he managed to say, Odin, hard sir, using the polite address his parental had carefully taught him. Dimly, Odin remembered being taken through the hard caverns, with their equipment, their machinery, their libraries, their meaningless, crowding sights and sounds. More than the actual sense perceptions, he remembered his inner feeling of despair. What would they do with him? His parental had told him that he would learn, but he didn't know what was really meant by learn, and when he asked his parental, it turned out that the older one didn't know either. It took him a while to find out, and the experience was pleasurable, so pleasurable, and yet not without its worrisome aspects. The hard one who had first called him Left was his first teacher. The hard one taught him to interpret the wave recordings, so that after a while what seemed an incomprehensible code became words. Words just as clear as those he could form with his own vibrations. But then that first one didn't appear anymore,
and another hard one took over. It was a time before Odin noticed. It was difficult in those early days to tell one hard one from another, to differentiate among their voices. But then he grew certain. Little by little, he grew certain, and he trembled at the change. He didn't understand its significance. He gathered courage and finally asked, "Where is my teacher, Hard Sir?"
"Gamaldin. He will no longer be with you, Left."
Odin was speechless for a moment. Then he said, "But hard ones don't pass on." He did not quite finish the phrase. It choked off. The new hard one was passive, said nothing, volunteered nothing. It was always to be like that, Odin found out. They never talked about themselves. On every other subject, they discoursed freely. Concerning themselves, nothing. From dozens of pieces of evidence, Odin could not help but decide that hard ones passed on, that they were not immortal, something so many soft ones took for granted. Yet no hard one ever said as much. Odin and the other student rationals sometimes discussed it, hesitantly, uneasily. Each brought in some small item that pointed inexorably to mortality of the hard ones, and wondered, and did not like to conclude the obvious. So they let it go. The hard ones did not seem to mind that hints of mortality existed. They did nothing to mask it. But they never mentioned it either. And if the question was asked directly, sometimes it was, inevitably, they never answered, neither denying nor affirming. And if they passed on, they had to be born also. Yet they said nothing of that, and Odin never saw a young hard one. Odin believed the hard ones got their energy from rocks instead of from the sun. At least that they incorporated a powdered black rock into their bodies. Some of the other students thought so too. Others, rather vehemently, refused to accept that. Nor could they come to a conclusion, for no one ever saw them feeding in any way, and the hard ones never spoke of that either. In the end, Odin took their reticence for granted, as part of themselves. Perhaps, he thought, it was their individuality, the fact that they formed no triads. It built a shell about them. And then, too, Odin learned things of such grave import that questions concerning the private life of the hard ones turned to trivia in any case. He learned, for instance, that the whole world was shriveling, dwindling. It was Lawston, the new teacher, who told him that. Odin had asked about the unoccupied caverns that stretched so endlessly into the bowels of the world, and Lawston had seemed pleased. "Are you afraid to ask about that, Odin?" He was Odin now, not some general reference to his lefthood. It was always a source of pride to hear a hard one address him by personal name. Many did so. Odin was a prodigy of understanding, and the use of his name seemed a recognition of the fact. More than once, Lawston had expressed satisfaction at having him as a pupil. Odin was indeed afraid, and after some hesitation said so. It was always easier to confess shortcomings to the hard ones than to fellow rationals, much easier than to confess them to Trit, unthinkable to confess them to Trit. Those were the days before Dua. "Then why do you ask?" Odin hesitated again. Then he said slowly, "I'm afraid of the unoccupied caverns, because when I was young I was told they had all sorts of monstrous things in them. But I know nothing of that directly. I only know what I have been told by other young ones who couldn't have known directly either. I want to find out the truth about them, and the wanting has grown until there is more of curiosity in me than fear. Lawston looked pleased. Good. The curiosity is useful, the fear useless. Your inner development is excellent, Odin. And remember, it is only your inner development that counts in the important things. Our help to you is marginal. Since you want to know, it is easy to tell you that the unoccupied caverns are truly unoccupied. They are empty. There is nothing in them but the unimportant things left behind in times past. Left behind by whom, hard sir? Odin felt uneasily compelled to use the honorific whenever he was too obviously in the presence of knowledge he lacked that the other had. By those who occupied them in times past. There was a time thousands of cycles ago when there were many thousands of hard ones and millions of soft ones. There are fewer of us now than there were in the past, Odin. Nowadays there are not quite 300 hard ones, and fewer than 10,000 soft ones.
Why? Said Odin, shocked. Only 300 hard ones left.
This was surely an open admission that hard ones passed on, but this was not the time to think of that. Because energy is diminishing. The sun is cooling. It becomes harder in every cycle to give birth and to live.
Well then, did not that mean the hard ones gave birth too?
And did it mean that the hard ones depended on the sun for food too, and not on rocks? Odin filed the thought away and dismissed it for now.
Will this continue? Odin asked.
The sun must dwindle to an end, Odin. And someday give no food.
Does that mean that all of us, the hard ones and the soft ones too, will pass on?
What else can it mean?
We can't all pass on. If we need energy, and the sun is coming to an end, we must find other sources, other stars.
But Odin... All the stars are coming to an end. The universe is coming to an end.
If the stars come to an end, is there no food elsewhere? No other source of energy?
No. All the energy sources in all the universe are coming to an end. Odin considered that rebelliously and said,
Then other universes... We can't give up just because the universe does.
He was palpitating as he said it. He had expanded with quite unforgivable discourtesy until he had swelled translucently into a size distinctly larger than the hard one. But Lawston merely expressed extreme pleasure. He said, Wonderful, my left dear. The others must hear of this. Odin had collapsed to normal size in mingled embarrassment and pleasure at hearing himself addressed as left dear, a phrase he had never heard anyone use to him. Except Trit, of course. It had not been very long after that that Lawston himself had brought them Dua. Odin had wondered idly if there had been any connection, but after a while wonder burned itself out. Trit had repeated so often that it was his own approach to Lawston that had brought them to her, that Odin gave up thinking about it. It was too confusing. But now he was coming to Lawston again. A long time had passed since those earlier days when he first learned that the universe was coming to an end, and that, as it turned out, the hard ones were resolutely laboring to live on anyway. He himself had become adept in many fields, and Lawston confessed that in physics there was little he could any longer teach Odin that a soft one could profitably learn. And there were other young rationals to take in hand, so he did not see Lawston as frequently as he once did. Odin found Lawston with two half-grown rationals in the radiation chamber. Lawston saw him at once through the glass and came out, closing the door carefully behind him. "My left, dear," he said, holding out his limbs in a gesture of friendship, so that Odine, as so often in the past, experienced a perverse desire to touch, but controlled it. "How are you?"
"I did not mean to interrupt, Lawston, sir."
"Interrupt? Those two will get along perfectly well by themselves for a time. They are probably glad to see me go, for I am sure I weary them with overmuch talk."
"Nonsense," said Odine. "You always fascinated me, and I'm sure you fascinate them."
"Well, well, it is good of you to say so. I see you frequently in the library, and I hear from others that you do well in your advanced courses, and that makes me miss my best student. How is Trit? Is he as parentally stubborn in his ways as ever?"
"More stubborn every day. He gives strength to the triad."
"And Dua?"
"Dua? I have come... She is very unusual, you know."
Lawston nodded. "Yes, I know that." His expression was one that Odine had grown to associate with melancholy. Odine waited a moment, then decided to tackle the matter directly. He said,
"Lawston, sir,
was she brought to us, to Trit and myself, just because she was unusual?" Lawston said, "Would you be surprised? You are very unusual yourself, Odine, and you have told me on a number of occasions that Trit is."
"Yes," said Odine with conviction, "he is."
"Then oughtn't your triad include an unusual emotional?"
"There are many ways of being unusual," said Odine thoughtfully. "In some ways,
Dua's odd ways displease Trit and worry me.
May I consult you?"
"Always."
"She is not fond of melting."
Lawston listened gravely, to all appearances unembarrassed. Odine went on. "She is fond of melting when we melt, that is, but it is not always easy to persuade her to do so." Lawston said, "How does Trit feel about melting? I mean, aside from the immediate pleasure of the act, what does it mean to him besides pleasure?"
"The children, of course," said Odine. "I like them."
"And Dua likes them too, but Trit is the parental.
Do you understand that?"
It suddenly seemed to Odine that Lawston couldn't possibly understand all the subtleties of the triad. "I try to understand," said Lawston. "It seems to me, then, that Trit gets more out of melting than melting alone. And how about yourself? What do you get out of it besides the pleasure?"
Odine considered. "I think you know that. A kind of mental stimulation."
"Yes, I know that. But I want to make sure you know. I want to make sure you haven't forgotten. You have told me often that when you come out of a period of melting, with its odd loss of time, during which I admit I sometimes didn't see you for rather long periods, that suddenly you found yourself understanding many things that had seemed obscure before."
"It was as though my mind remained active in the interval," said Odine.
"It was as though there was time which, even though I was unaware of its passing and unconscious of my existence, was necessary to me, during which I could think more deeply and intensely, without the distraction of the less intellectual side of life."
"Yes,"
agreed Lawston, "and you'd come back with a quantum jump in understanding. It is a common thing among you rationals, though I must admit no one improved in such great jumps as you did. I honestly think that no rational in history did so."
"Really?"
said Odine, trying not to seem unduly elated. On the other hand, I may be wrong. And Lawston seemed slightly amused at the other's sudden loss of shimmer. But never mind that. The point is that you, like Trit, get something out of the melt beside the melt itself.
Yes, most certainly.
And what does Dua get out of the melt besides the melt?
There was a long pause.
I don't know, said Odin. Have you never asked her?
Never.
But then, said Lawston, if all she gets out of a melt is the melt, and if you and Trit get out of it the melt plus something else, why should she be as eager for it as you two are?
Other emotionals don't seem to require, began Odin defensively.
Other emotionals aren't like Dua. You've told me that often enough, and, I think, with satisfaction.
Odin felt ashamed. I had thought it might be something else.
What might that be?
It's hard to explain. We know each other in the triad. We sense each other. In some ways, all three of us are part of a single individual, a misty individual that comes and goes. Mostly it's unconscious. If we think about it with too great a concentration, we lose it, so we can never get real detail.
Odin stopped rather hopelessly.
It's hard to explain the triad to someone.
Nevertheless, I am trying to understand. You think you have caught a portion of Dua's inner mind. Something she has tried to keep secret, is that it?
I'm not sure. It is the vaguest impression, sensed with a corner of my mind just now and then.
Well,
I sometimes think Dua doesn't want to have a baby emotional.
Lawston looked at him gravely. You only have two children so far, I think. A little left and a little right.
Yes, only two. The emotional is difficult to initiate, you know.
I know. And Dua will not trouble to absorb the necessary energy. Or even try to. She has any number of reasons, but I can't believe any of them. It seems to me that, for some reason, she just doesn't want an emotional. For myself, if Dua really didn't want one for a while, well, I would let her have her way. But Trit is a parental, and he wants one. He must have one. And somehow I can't disappoint Trit, not even for Dua. If Dua had some rational cause for not wanting to initiate an emotional, would that make a difference with you?
With me, certainly, but not with Trit. He doesn't understand such things.
But would you labor to keep him patient?
Yes, I would, for as long as I could.
Lawston said, has it occurred to you that hardly any soft ones? Here he hesitated as though searching for a word, and then he used the customary soft one phrase. Ever pass on before the children are born? All three, with the baby emotional last.
Yes, I know.
Odin wondered how Lawston could possibly think him ignorant of so elementary a bit of knowledge. Then the birth of a baby emotional is equivalent to the coming of time to pass on. Usually, not till the emotional is old enough, but the time for passing on will be coming. Might it not be that Dua does not want to pass on?
How can that be, Lawston? When the time comes to pass on, it is as when the time comes to melt. How can you not want to?
Hard ones didn't melt. Perhaps they didn't understand. Suppose Dua simply wants never to pass on. What would you then say?
Why, that we must
pass on eventually. If Dua merely wants to delay the last baby, I might humor her and even persuade Trit to, perhaps. If she wants never to have it, that simply cannot be allowed.
Why so? Odin paused to think it out.
I can't say, Lawston, sir, but I know we must pass on. I know it more and feel it more with each cycle, and sometimes I almost think I understand why.
You're a philosopher, I sometimes think, Odin, said Lawston dryly. Let's consider. By the time the third baby comes and grows, Trit will have had all his children and can look forward to passing on after a fulfilled life. You yourself will have had the satisfaction of much learning, and you too can pass on after a fulfilled life. But Dua?
I don't know, said Odin wretchedly. Other emotionals cling together all lifelong and seem to get some pleasure out of chattering with each other. Dua, however, will not do that.
Well, she is unusual. Is there nothing she likes?
She likes to listen to me talk about my work, mumbled Odin.
Lawston said, Well, don't be ashamed of that, Odin. Every rational talks about his work to his right and his mid. You all pretend you don't, but you all do.
Odin said, But Dua listens, Lawston, sir.
I'm quite sure she does. Not like other emotionals. And does it ever seem to you that she understands rather better after a melt?
Yes, I have noticed that at times. I didn't particularly pay any attention, though,
because you are sure emotionals can't really understand these things. But there seems to be considerable of the rational in Dua.
Odin looked up at Lawston with sudden consternation. Once Dua had told him of her childhood unhappiness, only once, of the shrill calls of the other emotionals, of the filthy name they had called her, Left M. Had Lawston heard of that somehow? But he was only looking calmly at Odin.
Odin said, I have sometimes thought that too.
Then he burst out, I am proud of her for that.
Nothing wrong with that, said Lawston. Why not tell her so? And if she likes to pamper the rationalness in herself, why not let her? Teach her what you know more intensively. Answer her questions. Will it disgrace your triad to do that?
I don't care if it does. And why should it anyway?
Trit will think it a waste of time, but I'll handle him. Explain to him that if Dua gets more out of life and a truer sense of fulfillment, she might not have the fear of passing on that she now has and might be more ready to have a baby emotional.
It was as though an enormous feeling of impending disaster had been lifted from Odin. He said hurriedly, You're right. I feel you're right. Lawston, sir, you understand so much. With you leading the hard ones, how can we fail to continue succeeding in the Other Universe project?
With me? Lawston was amused. You forget it is Estwald who is guiding us now. He is the real hero of the project. It would be nowhere without him.
Oh, yes, said Odin, momentarily discomfited. He had never yet seen Estwald. In fact, he had not yet met a soft one who had actually met him, though some reported having seen him in the distance now and then. Estwald was a new hard one. New, at least, in the sense that when Odin had been young, he had never heard him mentioned. Didn't that mean that Estwald was a young hard one? Had been a child hard one when Odin had been a child soft one? But never mind that. Right now, Odin wanted to get back home. He couldn't touch Lawston in gratitude, but he could thank him again and then hasten away joyfully. There was a selfish component to his joy. It was not just the distant prospect of the baby emotional and the thought of Trit's pleasure. It was not even the thought of Dewa's fulfillment. What counted with him at this very moment was the immediate, gleeful prospect ahead. He was going to be able to teach. No other rational could feel the pleasure of so doing, he was sure, for no other rational could possibly have an emotional like Dewa as part of the triad. It would be wonderful if only Trit could be made to understand the necessity. He would have to talk to Trit, somehow persuade him to be patient.